Good evening. Welcome to the Solaria Report. Today is October 9th, 2014. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Well, upcoming events, we have our event, How Do I Live in a Free and Inspired Life, November 8th and 9th in Menlo Park. We have, as of this morning, two tickets left, and I must say it's going to be an amazing group. 35 people coming. Dr. Joseph Farrell, Rappaport joining us by Skype. It's going to be very, very good. So I'm looking forward to that. December 13th, we're working to organize a Christmas dinner in New York. We will keep you posted. But hold that date if you're on the East Coast, December 13th. Our theme tonight is surfing the Ebola bailouts. That's my name for this unbelievably major, invasive media campaign cooking up something or cooking into something that is nothing, at least yet. We see Twitter. I'm getting engulfed by Twitters on Ebola. It's the official topic of interest. We're getting people are reporting all sorts of texts coming in on their smartphones from emergency services and local news services. Newspapers are full of it. Magazines are full of it. Emails. I'm getting inundated by Ebola emails. TV. I would say I've never seen a more serious turn on of entrainment technology and subliminal programming. I almost wonder if there isn't some, you know, massive general sort of ether emailing coming out of the cell towers and Wi-Fi networks, so it's in the field. Allegedly, one person from Liberia has died in Dallas. This is the basis of numerous people jumping on the bandwagon. It's kind of like everybody's issue is trying to find a way to ride this issue since we're all going to have it. It's like everybody's stopping for a car crash. And there's some very clever twists from Mr. Global, whichever the people who are engineering this campaign, they're having a lot of fun with this. They're doing a lot of twists and turns on the conspiracy theory. Oh, they're really not telling you the truth about Ebola. It's really funny. And then, of course, all the people who are being targeted as conspiracy theorists are trying to jump on, you know, now everybody coming across the border is got Ebola. And if you question them on it, you get hit with the retrovirus, the five children who allegedly died this week of that. And I finally turned around to someone. I did the calculations and said, look, on average, in the last week, 800 people in the United States have died from car crashes, 10,000 from heart disease. It's fair to say that the country is literally dying of a broken heart, and we can come up with a list of what's causing that. And moreover, for the last 10 years or longer, we've had chemtrails being sprayed. Well, it's longer than 10 years now. It's almost 20 years with, you know, full of nanoparticles, biowarfare, blood cells, spraying all over your land, your oxygen. But you're not angry about all those things. You're angry about Ebola and upset about Ebola. What's this about? So essentially what this is about is a financial event. You're looking at another way to assert a very domineering position, controlling position over the financial system in very invasive ways, potentially. One, it's going to give both the federal government and the central banks power to inject money off balance sheet in a whole variety of ways, particularly if they start declaring emergency powers. So if the Fed's cutting back $5 billion a month, you can find in lots of ways through this to put $5 billion back in without anybody really knowing it. And, of course, the more you have, quote-unquote, emergencies, the more all sorts of national security laws and laws within the credit programs in theory could kick in. You can also put a lot of money in established bureaucracies. The United Nations has announced they need $1 billion to deal with Ebola. The World Health Organization estimates they're going to need 490 million. We're getting billions of new resolutions for the U.S. and U.K. military to put boots on the ground in West Africa. I'm sure that if this continues to evolve, hospitals may get emergency responder preparation money. We'll see. There's a lot of opportunities to selectively replenish politically connected coffers that have been drained by Obamacare. And, of course, the big one is it's in place in case they need to do bank holidays. They can blame it all on pandemics or viruses. It's interesting. One I had thought of, but which came up today, was one commenter on Giza Death Star said that they had no intention of using paper money so long as these virus and germs were going around. So until the Ebola danger was off, they were only going to use digital money. Well, I'm sure that Mr. Global loves that one. I wonder where it came from. We see a lot of promotion of cutting off air travel to West Africa. I think that's more efforts to control African investment, what's going down there. There's no indication yet, but watch out. You know, if the effort on mandated vaccines gets going, we're going to want to stop that one. Anyway, but to date, I think this is a financial phenomena, and it's certainly working to be a very good distraction. Coming into the campaign, if you look at the economic news and the slower growth, there's real problems in dealing with the elections and on the hard information and facts, and so much better to have a distraction. I put up several commentaries this week. Many of them go to this sort of media trance and manipulation. One of them is called the Patty Hearst ISIS trance, and it's really about what a completely wag the dog, ridiculous thing the whole ISIS thing is, which we've talked about on the Salier Report in the last couple of weeks. So I won't repeat that, but you know, that's up there with Ebola. And then also one called Musings on No One, Nobody, and Somebody, about the kind of circular reasoning you get in when you hear somebody say, why does no one do anything? You say, wait a minute, hundreds and thousands of people have done something. And what you discover is as soon as somebody does something, of course, they're out with the establishment, and that makes them no one, so it doesn't count what they're doing. It's very funny. It's kind of like the only thing we'll believe is what Mr. Global tells us we need to believe. Anyway, but it's as you look over, whether in the commentaries or what's going on with the sort of Ebola media event, you start to wonder because, you know, I think one of the most frustrating things for many of us is we see perfectly wonderful, intelligent, sane people completely fall for this stuff. I mean, I know some really smart, wonderful people who continually take all this stuff seriously. And so I think there's nothing to do, but it's, I think the, you know, sort of the entrainment in the media trance is almost like a food poisoning, and it just needs to go through the system and come out the other side. Please, 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 if you haven't listened to the Adam Trombley interview we did on entrainment technology and subliminal programming, you really need to listen to it and take it very much to heart with what's going on. I think it will really help guide you and understand some of what we're dealing with. The second thing is, we are coming into the winter season. It is expected to be a very cold and tough winter season. And Lord knows, given the stress, there are absolutely flu bugs and other stuff going around. So listen to the Salier Report we did with Laura Thompson on winter wellness. It's a really good one. And now's the time to start thinking about what you need to do to prepare your immune system and to detox. We did another one on detox that's really good. So just check out Winter Wellness with Dr. Laura Thompson. And finally, if you're really interested in what's going on with Ebola and you want to follow the facts, I would definitely check out John Rappaport's No More Fake News. He's covering it regularly. We're going to have him back on the Salier Report for his quarterly report, and I will make sure that he says something about Ebola. Money and markets, it's turning out to be the year of the bonds. Can you believe it? Just when we thought the long-term bull market in bonds was over, it pops up again. Long-term Treasury's year-to-date yield is 16%, if you can imagine that. The U.S. bond aggregate is up about 4% or 4% returns total for year-to-date. And that compares, it's almost equivalent to the S&P now up 4.3% for the year. So that's down a little bit from where it was at the end of the third quarter. Europe's down about 2.5%. The real drag in the U.S. markets, the small caps are down 4%. The Russell's down 4%. Emerging markets have given up all their gains of the year. Now they're flat for the year, ditto with gold. It's emerging markets and gold are flat. We've seen oil, gas, and commodities all get really hammered this week. They popped up after the Fed minutes came out on Wednesday and really popped up at the end of the market, but down again today. So, you know, there's no doubt about it. We're way overdue for 10 to 20% correction in the markets. And so this, you know, this may be happening. If it does happen, it's perfectly normal. I don't see anything on the horizon right now that threatens the long-term trend up in U.S. equities. I can't say that the Ebola event is helping biotech, but clearly that's the part of the market that's one of the strongest parts and lead in the market. Russia, of course, is getting clocked, and I think that part of what we're seeing in the oil and gas prices and stocks is an effort to sort of pull revenues from Putin's coffers. So G7 is easing up on the oil card and giving China a break so that they can deliver a blow to Putin. And I think that if anything augurs for lower oil and gas prices, it's the war with the Russians. But I don't think it's just a global slowdown story. It's I think part of it is the sort of the set game match with Russia. The Russian market's down 23% this year. So I continue to watch for opportunity in the emerging markets, including Russia, and opportunities in commodities, but clearly the message is not yet. The U.S. dollar continues to be strong. It dipped back down below 85, but it's holding, and it has the potential to go much, much higher. If it does, that's going to be very bad news for emerging markets, very bad news for gold. There is a danger of a reset trap. I've put several articles up on the blog that describe it. If the Fed starts ratcheting up on interest rates, you're going to see everybody around the world needing dollars to cover debt and derivatives. And you could see a dollar heads up, the dollar index head up much more. It's almost sort of a reset to the upside for the dollar. It's sort of the opposite of the reset that the gold bugs are always describing. You wake up one morning and gold's at 5,000 or 10,000 because we've had a reset. Because we've seen so much going on that's of interest in the precious metals market, Franklin and I did a special recording. It's up on the blog in a separate blog post from the Solari report. And it's really, and Franklin did some charts for us. So I would encourage you, if you're interested both in the U.S. dollar market and precious metals, to listen to that. It was a great discussion. Also, the comic book for the wrap-up went up with the wrap-up we did last week, and I've gotten a lot of very positive comments, people saying it really helps them see the deeper trends and put a lot of the news, which can be very disjointed, in perspective. So we should have the transcript up by next week, and I would really encourage you listen to it, take a look at the comic book, which is a web presentation, and then, of course, the transcript will be up. One of the things I talked about in the wrap-up with bits and atoms, the importance of, in all these different industries, being good at both digital and physical, and interestingly enough, top story on the Wall Street Journal today, Amazon has announced that they are opening their first storefront in New York. Now, I don't necessarily believe that this is going to be a permanent, that Amazon's really going to go physical. But I just think in the bits and atoms theme, it's very important. I used to live in New York and watch so many different stores open. Clearly what was never going to be an economic store, but a store to sort of market their brand, plopped right into the middle of a place where many, many members of the media would walk by. It was very, always very interesting to see it, so it doesn't surprise me that Amazon is going to try it. Lots going on in the derivative markets. Banks have gotten together and changed the fundamental rules about how they're going to behave in the derivative markets. If we get another big bank in trouble, it's all part of getting ready for not too big to fail. And at the same time, we see a series of settlements around the LIBOR issue. And as you know, I believe that was an effort by the central banks, or that is an effort by the central banks, to assert more control of interest rates. So they've got the big banks on the setting the short-term interest rate market much more under their thumb. The IMF has lowered global growth forecast for 2014. what we're seeing is slower growth around the world. It's part of what's happening with currencies. We're, you know, as exports slow down, everybody tries to lower their currency so that they can sort of compete more effectively for the export market. And we're really running the risk of the kind of deflation we saw during the Great Recession in the 20s and the 30s, where you literally seeing a deflationary spiral down. And there's no doubt it's happening. One of the things the IMF called for was greater investment in infrastructure. And that's something I think we need, you know, no matter what's going on. So I say here, there's a way you can do infrastructure investment that will do a tremendous amount to sort of permanently lower our footprint and increase productivity. I think it's a great idea. It's also a story from Bloomberg up on the blog about Project Neptune, which is an effort by the big banks to get together and set up a online bond trading. And given the cutbacks in the bond market, I think that's important before interest rates go up here. You're going to need a way electronically to add a lot more liquidity to that market. So that's a good development. Talk about a circus. We've been watching a trial in New York. Greenberg of AIG fame is suing about what the government did to him. And this is definitely the Midianite thing. Paulson and Geithner and a variety of luminaries have been called to testify and explain what they did during the bailouts. It's really kind of, you know, if the whole thing wasn't so sad, it would be, you know, funny. But we laugh so as not to cry. But so everybody's getting called up and made to look ridiculous. And there it is. But I have to say that Greenberg has more chutzpah than any person. If you look at what AIG was really up to, their operations on the covert side, I would love to see Greenberg have to survive true transparency on his operation. Our hero this week is a guy named Ben Hall. He's a Michigan policeman who stopped a young mother who didn't have a booster seat. And rather than giving her a ticket for not having a booster seat for her kids, he went down to the store and bought her one. So I can't tell you how many times we see police and enforcement and the sheriff's office play gotcha with somebody, and they're writing tickets and fines because people... And the reason people don't have what they're supposed to have or not doing what they're supposed to doing is they don't have any money. So it's just the fine is what I used to hear when I was in government. I had one deputy who would say an auditor is a person who bayonets the wound. So it's wonderful to see Officer Hall, instead of bayoneting the wound, going around and figuring out how to put a real bandage on the wound. So thank you, Officer Hall, for your leadership. We need to be doing thousands of those things throughout our lives every day. Okay, ask Catherine. In tonight's broadcast, please comment on Eric Holder's resignation. Does this mean he will not face prosecution for his crimes? Could it be an indication that the elites are backing down? No. My guess is that Holder was ready to go back into private practice. But I also think he had built up so much baggage, and that baggage was going to hurt them on the campaign. So it was just time for him to step down. He's probably not going to really go until they have a replacement. So Holder may be with us for a while. What you consider to be crimes, the elites or the people who run the White House and run the federal government, you know, this guy was doing what he was asked to do. So if anything, he'll be given awards and a nice partnership at a nice Washington law firm. So he did what he was told to do. And putting an African-American face on the effort to build totalitarianism was a very, very effective strategy, and it's worked very well. If you don't understand Holder and his operation, I would really encourage you to go read the Dylan Reed story, my online book at dunwalkie.com. It's Dylan Reed and the Aristocracy of Stock Profits, and you'll get a real sense of who and what Eric Holder really is. Hello, why were you so disparaging of King World News last time? I felt you were totally dismissive. Some guests are quite good. Paul Craig Roberts, Jim Richards, Nigel, I think it's Farage, to name three, are worth listening to, in my opinion. You know, I'm not going to go into the details of why, but I consider that to be a website that has little to no integrity. I do agree that some of the guests are good and some of the postings are useful, but because of the nature and integrity of the website, I just simply don't use it. I don't link to it. And but I do agree that some of the guests are good, and they're people I link to in other venues. I think, though, it's very important to understand that and I say this about websites that I do think have integrity as well as this one. We have a whole world of people who are committed to believing that the dollar is going to collapse, and gold's going to go to the moon. And, you know, there's certain kinds of scenarios. And the reality is, and it's many of the people that you hear at King World News, they never talk about the really important issues financially. And by important issues, I mean, who's really governing this planet? What's really going on? Where are the trillions of dollars going missing to? They never get into the really big questions. They stay down in sort of the, you know, dollar up, gold down, gold up, dollar down baseball. And I just think that if you really want to understand the important questions, you ought to go get the Secret Space Program feed and watch that. And if you do watch that, and if you understand what people like Joseph Farrell and Richard Dolan and I am saying, what you will see is that the picture you get at places like King World News is so rife with material omissions that at this point it's, you know, I just think you... things have gone far too long and far too serious to keep going around like a hamster in a wheel in a very limited paradigm that shuts off all the most important questions about what in the world is going on planet Earth, who's governing, and why are we behaving the way we're behaving. So I think it's a conversation that happens within very unfortunate limitations as to what's allowed in the conversation and not. So if you haven't watched the Secret Space Program feed, I can't recommend it strongly enough. I'm hoping that the Global BEM Group will put it up for free by the end of the month. But I just think it's time to talk about the really serious and deeper issues. All financial systems are part of a governance system, and if you're not prepared to really look hard at the real governance system and what's going on, you know, you're always going to be going around in circles, and I think that's what happens to a lot of the financial types. A wonderful post from somebody in Austin, Texas, suggesting we come by and do a lunch with Catherine in Austin again, and I'm going to pursue that, see if that's something we can't do in the spring. A question about IRA providers, and there are several good IRA custodians that will allow you to do private deals. They'll allow you to do precious metals, real estate. They'll also access really first-rate Swiss money managers, and if you have and hold, if the account's big enough, you can use your Swiss money manager to also buy bullion and put it at the really first-rate Swiss custodian. So there's a lot of flexibility to do the IRAs. And the subscriber in question asked me about a particular one, which I don't know. I'm not familiar with that one, but there are certainly more than several good ones that can lead you into depository relationships or different kinds of investment that give you lots of flexibility and access first-rate money managers, including abroad. I just finished listening to your Solaria report on September 18th. You mentioned strategic planning and visioning as related to your 3 to 5 year plan. I was inspired to send a comment. We don't need more organizations. We need organisms. They need to be self-organizing, self-sustaining, and self-regulating. The image is bacteria or clouds. I was working with these ideas when I retired, but have continued to maintain a fascination with them. The most successful business model thus far of this kind of group is the 12-step anonymous movement. There is literally an anonymous 12-step group for everything today. Yes, I have to tell you, I think the most successful organization in the world is probably Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a quite successful model. That's one of the reasons why I've proposed salary circles or small investment clubs, because in fact, if you look at reengineering the economy in a place, you need very small groups that can trust each other and then can come together in syndicates that create something much bigger, but then pull apart. They're much more flexible. It's, you know, that's the way you see the different firms operate on Wall Street. It's very effective for managing lots of money. I would be careful because, of course, the totally atomized approach is exactly what the guys who have the entrainment technology want. If everybody's, you know, not in a family or not in a group or not in an organization, but just on their own, they're much, with their smartphone, they're much more easy to control. So that's the one thing to keep in mind, because I think you want to be careful. Somebody writes, here's the link to the trailer for the new movie about what happened to journalist Gary Webb, and judging from the trailer, it looks good. He's referring to Kill the Messenger, which opens tomorrow night. So I have tickets to see it here in San Francisco, and I'm looking forward to it also opening and traveling around the country. Shadows of Liberty, you can get the DVD at their website. And I will review them and cover them in a Salary Report that we're going to do, Gary Webb, Narco Dollars, and You, at the end of October. I'm looking forward to that one. As you know, Hamilton Securities and the what happened to Hamilton Securities Group was deeply involved with what happened to Gary Webb and the Dark Alliance story, and we'll be talking about that later this month. But if you're interested in checking out a movie this weekend or next, check them out, Kill the Messenger and Shadows of Liberty. Hi, Catherine. You've mentioned in various discussions that there is a total return on investment, which includes the investment itself, the return, and the return to the network. You've noted that companies that have a good investment but suck the life out of their network ultimately fail. While I've seen examples where companies that invest in both their idea and their network are more successful than those who ignore their network, I've never actually come across a numerical example of how this works. Do you happen to have a case example of this that I could use when talking to people about the concept? Thanks for your help. I would recommend getting a wonderful book called The Living Company by Ari DeGuse, which is one of the best studies I've ever seen on this topic. Certainly not a case study, I would really encourage you to get Evolution of Cooperation by Robert Axelrod. I would love to see more case studies on this topic, and there may be a business professor who's done them. I don't know, but we certainly need to, and it would be a great suggestion. One of the reasons I wrote the Dylan Reed and the Aristocracy of Stock Profits was to do a case study that goes to some of the issues between using government money to subsidize private returns and vice versa, and the issues of positive and negative total return, both from the taxpayer side and the company side. But check out The Living Company by Ari DeGuse and Evolution of Cooperation by Robert Axelrod. I think it may help you discuss the concepts. Dear Catherine, there are people who have been saying that the amount of additional energy we've been generating from fracking will soon begin dissipating, leading to higher oil prices. What's your opinion on this? I've seen the discussions both ways and don't really have a strong opinion. I think time will tell. What's important to understand is fracking and all of the things we're doing to keep the oil flow coming is, we're spending more and more money to get less and less. So we have a declining curve. And that's the important thing to understand. What we're seeing is tremendous improvement in the cost competitiveness of renewables. And what I'm hoping for is that improvement can continue, even grow exponentially, sort of the semiconductor curve happening in solar and things like it. Because if we can get a real explosion in sort of cost productivity and improvements in renewables, as well as start to bring in breakthrough energy, then we can get beyond fossil fuel. One of the things I pointed out in the wrap-up is we still have 87.5% of energy supplied from fossil fuels on planet Earth. So we're far, far from making any progress on this point. But there's no doubt about it. In the oil arena, as well as mining many different commodities, there's no doubt we're spending a lot more to get a lot less. Thank you. In Let's Go to the Movies, we had two items. I put up the audio for the Screwtape Letters by C.S. Lewis, which is one of my favorite books that addresses the issue of spiritual warfare. And then for our movie, I had Monsters, Inc., a wonderful child's cartoon that really, really describes a lot of the critical aspects of spiritual warfare. And I discussed them both with Franklin in the interview, so I won't repeat it here. The interview with Franklin was really fun for me. I wanted, we've gotten a lot of requests from subscribers to discuss spiritual warfare, and it surprised me, and the intensity of the requests has grown and grown and grown, and finally I said, okay. One of my reluctances is, for me, this Leary Report is not an appropriate venue for proselytizing on any particular religion. I'm Christian, but my purpose on this planet is not to talk you into being a Christian or talking you into any particular spiritual faith. I believe each person is responsible to find the truth in their own way. I was raised a Quaker. Maybe it comes from that. But I have seen religion misused in many different roles and venues. And misused terribly when you come into the conversation about finances and economics. So I tend to keep the two separate. So, but to talk about spiritual warfare, I really need to talk from the vantage point of my faith. And of course, Franklin is a minister, and ministers leads the Christ Our Hope Church in West Point, Tennessee, and of which I'm a member. So we spoke as Christians, but interestingly enough, whenever I talk about spiritual warfare, I'm always amazed at how John Rappaport's completely non-Christian conversation about the same thing aligns so closely with many parts of what I believe and many parts of Scripture, although I've always wanted to have a Salieri Report where John and I talk about how the two match up and the extraordinary alignment between his philosophy and a lot of the sort of Pentecostal Christian teachings. Anyway, but because I wanted a non-Christian approach, I've asked John at the end of the month to also do spiritual warfare. So he's going to be doing his own version in 2 weeks. So it'll be interesting. I had a long list of things I wanted to discuss with Franklin today. We got about halfway through the list, so I told him, you're going to have to come back and do part two. And so don't be surprised if we have more spiritual warfare. Certainly John Rappaport in 2 weeks, and I'd like to have Franklin back to do even more. But it was a very lovely discussion, and spiritual warfare is a set of tools and strategies that has saved my life on more than one occasion. So I do hope you find it useful. In closing, we've got some very interesting things coming up. Next week, we're going to be talking about how to do a successful Kickstarter campaign. And I've invited the leader of a Kickstarter that I participated in. It's a chef in the San Francisco area, lovely chef named Karen Diggs, who wanted to build a product called Crowdsource, K-R-A-U-T. And she does Crowdsource is a little... It's a little sort of tool to help you make fermented food. And one of the reasons I've never done that is if you look at sort of what you have to do in the equipment you need, it gets way too complicated. And every time I look at doing it, I said, no, you know, it's too complicated. I'm never really going to do it. Well, Karen came up with a way of doing it, which even someone like I can do. And it's relatively simple. And I went to her campaign and was so impressed. I said, you know, I've got to have one of those. Anyway, Karen started off with a target of, I think she and her partner were targeting $38,000, and they ended up raising $180,000. It was a huge success. It was so successful, in fact, that Kickstarter asked her to join them at the New York Maker Faire as one of five people chosen to represent the idea of how you do a successful Kickstarter campaign. So it's a perfect example of what a great thing you know, can happen on crowdfunding when it works right. So Karen's going to join us, and we're going to be talking more about what are the ingredients of doing a successful crowdfund. And I think that could be very useful, because if you look at what's going on, it's quite exciting. And one of the, I think, the most positive things going around. Then, of course, October 23rd, John Rappaport's Spiritual Warfare. And then October 30th, I'll be discussing Gary Webb, Narco Dollars and You. And that will include a review of Kill the Messenger, the new movie out on his Gary Webb's life. And then Shadow of Liberty, which is the documentary about how the media turned on him. And banging the drum about media manipulation and trances, it's a perfect way to finish the month and celebrate Halloween. Anyway, so until next week with Karen Diggs and how to do a successful Kickstarter campaign, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.